Hello, my name's Florence. Welcome to the Obs Pod. I'm an NHS obstetrician, hoping to share some thoughts and experiences about my working life. Perhaps you enjoy Call the Midwife, maybe birth fascinates you, or you're simply curious about what exactly an obstetrician is. You might be pregnant and preparing for birth. Perhaps you work in maternity and want to know what makes your obstetric colleagues tick, or you want some fresh ideas and inspiration. Whichever of these is the case, and for that matter, anyone else that's interested, the Obs Pod is for you. Episode 72. Respect. I'm recording this episode thinking about World Patient Safety Day, which is being held on the 17th of September, 2021. World Patient Safety Day is an initiative run by the WHO, the World Health Organization. And for this year's World Patient Safety Day, they're urging people to act now for safe and respectful childbirth. The theme is safe maternal and newborn care. Although I'm fortunate enough to live in a country and practice in a country with low perinatal and maternal morbidity and mortality, there is currently a lot of work focused on improving safety in maternity and with national aspirations to reduce stillbirth and neonatal death. I'm interested that the WHO have chosen to focus on safe and respectful care, as I feel this emphasises an important element of safety. And that's true in the UK and abroad. What does the word respect mean? I check the definition. Respect is due regard for the feelings, wishes, or rights of others. In the UK and many other health systems, we love evidence-based care, but our application of national standards and guidance does need to take into consideration what's important for that individual woman and what her priorities are. Respecting her rights as an autonomous person to determine her own care according to the information we've provided. Understanding what's important to that woman and her family is critical to providing respectful, safe care. Safe and respectful care should be a given in a country where we have good access to healthcare. But even in the UK, where I practice, sometimes we're challenged. If a woman's decision and wishes are at odds with our own, we can find ourselves in a really uncomfortable position. Guidance is just that, guidance. It doesn't mean that the woman has to agree to the course of action we're suggesting. We need to listen and respect her autonomy and her ability to make decisions without her being made to feel reckless and irresponsible. It's all too easy to try and baffle people with scientific knowledge. And some birth writers and podcasters talk about coercion or compliance. If we say a baby might die as the result of a woman's decisions and actions, we're putting the responsibility onto her, or we're giving her no alternative to doing what we suggest, even though actually she may not feel that's the right decision for her and her baby. We may talk about risks to her baby without quantifying them. The word risk itself is quite emotive, and how we frame the numbers may influence her decision making. And what seems high risk to us versus what seems high risk to her could be two completely different things. I've definitely seen women's decisions and plans curtailed by obstetrician, distress or fear, or midwifery, fear. How can we expect those poor midwives and doctors to look after a woman and pick up the pieces, in inverted commas, when she's put herself in this situation? We have a duty to care for her, after all. But that doesn't mean she has to conform to everything we say. When I was studying for my exams, we used to talk about relative contraindications and absolute contraindications. This is something we could employ a bit more. The absolute contraindication to vaginal birth and therefore absolute indication for caesarean are far and few between, a low-lying placenta being one of them, because a woman will hemorrhage severely, giving birth vaginally. But the relative contraindications to vaginal birth are far more common than what we deal with, which means there is an element of decision-making and choice there. In my clinical work, I spend a significant amount of time with women who are at odds with guidance, so-called outside of guidance. Some hospitals have an out-of-guideline guideline. By definition, any of the women I see in my role as a link consultant to the home birth team are outside of guidance. They don't meet the criteria for midwifery-led care. Otherwise, why would they be coming to see me? I enjoy seeing these women. I enjoy thinking through, problem-solving with them, weighing up and balancing the pros and cons of their different ideas, and trying to give them my assessment of what I think the issues are so that they can make a well-informed choice. Like many things in obstetrics, the conversations are an estimation of risk and likelihood of that risk occurring. And this is a scale we often use in the hospital when we're doing risk assessments. We have scales that help us consider this. Perhaps we could employ them more with women too. For example, our likelihood scale goes from rare, probably never happening, unlikely, not expecting it to happen, possible, might happen or occur occasionally, likely, probably will happen, and almost certain, will undoubtedly happen. And then on the other side, we have the impact of those events happening from negligible through minor to moderate to major, ending in catastrophic in terms of the consequences. We use this likelihood and consequence to make a risk matrix. This means that you multiply the number associated with the consequence or severity with the likelihood or the frequency to get an overall idea of risk. For example, if we take stillbirth, it's in most situations unlikely or rare, so that would score a 2 or a 1. But the consequence is catastrophic, which is a score of 5. So it might be that we'll end up with a risk of either 2 times 5, 10, or 1 times 5, 5. So somewhere moderate risk. Where using this type of scale, the maximum risk would be a score of 25. When I support women's choices outside of guidance, or as I like to think, more personalised, bespoke care planning, I work really closely with my consultant midwife colleague. She likes to use the BRAIN acronym to help inform decision making. This stands for B, benefits, R, risks, A, alternatives, I, intuition, gut feeling. N, nothing. For example, let's use the brain acronym to think about vaginal birth after cesarean on the birth centre rather than on the obstetric unit. Benefits might be: the research has shown that starting care on the birth centre will reduce the chance of intervention, supports physiology, a calm, relaxing, more homely environment, which has a positive influence on birth outcomes. The risks or limitations might be that we don't offer continuous heartbeat monitoring on the birth centre. And there's also the potential for a delay in receiving obstetric care if required, because we don't routinely have doctors there. An alternative might be labour and birth on the main obstetric labour ward with wireless monitoring and use of the labour ward birth pool. Intuition. What's the woman's gut feeling? She may have been referred to discuss the option of birthing on the birth centre because it's something she wants to explore, and she may want time to think about her choice of place of birth and where feels right to her after the appointment. And finally, N, nothing. If no plan is in place, the default place of birth would be to transfer to the main obstetric labour ward. So brain can be useful for women to look at their choices and for us to help them through those decisions. A very important element when respecting a woman's wishes are respecting her cultures and beliefs. Attitudes to childbirth are wide-ranging. There are many distinct cultures around the world. Just because someone doesn't conform to our cultural norm does not mean they are wrong. They're just behaving in the way that their friends, family, or community behave. They hold a separate set of beliefs and expectations to ourselves. This might seem a separate issue from safety, but in fact, they're closely intertwined. We know there's inequality in our country in perinatal maternal outcomes, and to address that, we need to make efforts to meet women where they are and not expect them to bend to our norms. Recently, I read a fabulous piece of work by Alice Ladder, which I've attached in the programme notes. Alice set out to use the Who's Shoes maternity game for her PhD. Alice is a Ugandan midwife. She wanted to look at the use of Who's Shoes maternity content with Ugandan men. Why men? One of the keys to Ugandan women accessing maternity care in Uganda is the attitude of men in the family. Alice set out to look at this because in Uganda, there's a high maternal mortality rate, the principal cause of which is delayed or little access to maternity care. So Alice set out to look at the attitude of Ugandan men in the UK, piloting the game with a small number of men to see how it would influence their thoughts about women in their family accessing maternity care and putting the men in the women's shoes. Although the impact of this in the UK would be far lower because healthcare in the UK is more accessible, for me, Alice testing this highlighted an issue that I need to consider in my clinic. If I'm caring for a woman from Uganda or another culture where actually men are key in the decision making, I need to take this into account. This may not be comfortable. It may be at odds with my Western feminist credentials. After all, a woman should have the right to access maternity care. She's autonomous. It's her decision, regardless of the influence of men in her life. She's living in the UK, so her context is significantly different than if she was in Uganda. But I'm expecting her to adjust to my UK NHS norms. If I miss that for her, the men in her family are an important influence, then I'm potentially missing a step in how to improve outcomes. I know I can sometimes interpret the presence of men at appointments as a nicety. And I know staff sometimes comment that the man can seem to speak for the woman, and we're keen to address our discussion to her, which is, of course, the right thing to do. But actually, we need to address our information to them together, because in her decision making, he may be instrumental. This is one tiny example. Being based in London for most of my career, I experience a very diverse population of women, and each bring with them their own set of beliefs, myths, and rituals. For example, I know women from the US or Israel find it uncomfortable that we have a midwifery-based system. They want to know who is their OBGYN. A woman from Brazil, where there's an exceptionally high cesarean rate, may come expecting that cesarean birth is the only option for her. She may have friends and family in her community that think she would be mad to consider vaginal birth or a water birth. And a woman from Holland, where traditionally home birth rates have been high, may not comprehend why I am suggesting she gives birth in a hospital. We can then add to the mix diversity in age, background, level of education, and sexuality. All manner of characteristics that make up an individual. I cannot possibly hope to understand every nuance of a woman's decision-making, however much empathy I employ. All I can hope is to provide her with the best information possible, provide it in a form she can understand, and give her time to consider her range of options. But only she can decide what alternatives mean for her. My message this World Patient Safety Day, my zesty bit, is that to provide safe and respectful care in childbirth, I first need to check myself, my assumptions, and allow her perception, her version, her priorities to come to the fore, regardless of what I may think is best. And if you're a pregnant woman listening to this, perhaps think about assessing your choices using the BRAIN acronym or a risk matrix so that you can take time to work out what works for you and not feel pressured into doing something just because you feel you ought. I do hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode of the Obs Pod. Feel free to contact me on Twitter at FWMaternity or at the Obs Pod to ask me questions, give me topics for future episodes, or let me know what you think. It's absolutely fantastic when you get in touch. I really enjoy reading your comments. As usual, I've tried to include in the programme notes some extra reading about this particular topic, both for professionals working in maternity care and for pregnant women using services. I'd like to reassure you that although I'm talking about my experiences working in maternity care, I take confidentiality very seriously and do not give any personal information about any of my patients. If you've enjoyed listening, I'd love you to recommend the Obs Pod to friends or colleagues, and please do leave me a review on whichever podcast directory you find my episodes. Many thanks for listening.